Hello, folks, and welcome to episode 7 of the ATFA Talking Wood podcast. My guest speaker today is a gentleman who started out in Brisbane and is now applying his trade up in the north of Queensland. He's just an all-around great guy in our industry. He runs United Wood Floors Australia and is also an inspector with the ATFA. So hello, Dwight O'Connell, and welcome to the ATFA Talking Wood podcast.
Thanks, Josh. Pleasure to be here.
Excellent. So let's start off, Dwight, if you just want to tell us a bit about yourself and where it all started for you in our industry.
Yeah, I had family that was in the trade when I was young growing up, from 15, 14, everyone knows when they got their kids on site working away. They were into vinyls and carpets, had floor covering shops, and sanding and finishing was just part of their repertoire, I suppose. So grew up doing the trade, didn't know how much I knew until I left the corporate world. When I left home, I went into the corporate world, spent about 12, 15 years in that. And then one day I just come home to the wife and said, that's it. I want to get back into the trade. So just bought some tools and off I went in the naive days of starting out sanding.
Fantastic. And how long ago were we talking this?
It would have been 12 years ago now.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. And just had enough of the corporate side of things and just wanted to get back out there?
Yeah. Without divulging too much, you start working for the big corporates and it just wasn't aligned with my morals, I suppose, in a lot of ways. So through the history of the corporate world, we do what we call psychometric testing, Evalex, and that, things of that nature. And it always came out saying I had to do something which gave me an instantaneous result and then I'd be satisfied, and it tended to work out that way. So sanding and finishing floors gives you that.
Definitely does. Fantastic. Okay, let's move forward now to more the technical side. So it's important to manage the owner's expectations. So how do you do that?
Early in the days, and this is something that's progressed and changed as we move forward, because once we started to get into insurance work, it became a very different story. Earlier on, it was the client gets what you're given, and you didn't seem to get too many callbacks or related problems. Then moving into the insurance game down around Brisbane and the Gold Coast, it became really apparent that when you maybe explain, you may have a gloss variation in the solvent coating, clients didn't understand what that actually means until it's on the floor and then they see it. We didn't think it would look like that. So I think expectations have definitely changed, and something which was noticed up in North Queensland is a lot of the guys hadn't done insurance work, a lot of the other timber flooring businesses that were up here, and were really struggling because of the expectations of the homeowners. And essentially, if you talk to the flooring companies and the like now up here since those the cyclone took place, and since having done insurance work, they've said clients are so much harder to please now. And I think a lot of that's got to do with the way the policies are written, like for like, from the insurance companies. So that does make a challenge to what the customer expects. And the ordeal is very stressful for people. So by the time they've rebuilt their home and the finishing trades are coming in, they've probably been lied to 100 times or not told the truth. Exactly. And then they don't believe anything you say.
And the time frame is 3 months later too.
Absolutely. You know, and ultimately, without being involved with the ATFA and having the resources that we do have, I'm at the stage now where I basically show people all the characteristics that can become or come out as part of a floor being sanded. We don't so much go into terms of acceptability, but you know, if we talk about orange peel or something of that nature using solvent based coatings, we can show them a visual with the manuals, which is really handy. So I now have a fairly detailed document detailing most of the most common characteristics that come out with board replacements or sanding floors, or what to expect and what the differences are in coatings. So it's a pretty, and even then you will still have challenges with clients and homeowners. You've handed it to them, they've signed it, they've read it. Well, what's that? That's a bit of rejection from Silicon. And it's just, this is where we explained it. So that's really a big part of my business now, is setting that up before we move forward, especially with the insurance work. When we go to private work, that probably just now comes with the conversation at the beginning, and then showing them pictures rather than them having to sign off on the characteristics that make it be a result.
Yeah, fantastic. So if you know owners have high expectations, do you charge extra as more care is needed and effort to put into that job?
No, I'd like to think that we basically have a standard of service which is higher than industry standards by a long shot, because from my opinion, they're pretty low, the industry standards. However, every client is, I now have people trying to show me their wonderful home that's huge, and it was only 3 weeks early we were working on something bigger, you know. So
yeah,
really that's out the window for me in a way. We don't take extra time or anything on a job. It's probably more time setting the expectation.
Yeah, correct. Good point. So when it comes to coding choice, do you just let the owner decide, or do you provide guidance on what might suit them best? I'm thinking that a high gloss, high solids, solvent-based polyurethane might not be the best for resand and coat for an older parquetry floor due to quilting.
Look, there's a whole heap around choosing the right coating for the floor, and that again comes with a whole lot of explanation walking around with the homeowner. Lots of clients will say, hey, I just want gloss on my old parquetry floor. So we will show them what quilting is, and this is a reasonable outcome of what you will experience if we put this down, and try and give them a balance. Then we give our recommendations. I really don't try and sell a product to a client.
Okay.
I give them the characteristics of a client and say, go away and investigate yourself. Here's all the information, and you come up with whatever you require at the end of it. And there's a lot about when the client's talking to you what they want. And, you know, there's the old saying, if you were to buy a new Ferrari, do you want a red one or a gold one? And that depicts what type of person you are. I know somebody at the ATFA, he brings that up commonly. And so 10 minutes of conversation with the client, if they're just all about the bang and the boom and they want it glossy and shiny, still point out, you know, characteristics that may come out from doing that on a floor. But ultimately they make the choice.
And what suits their environment, obviously, too.
Yeah, look, and you know, we get houses that are sandy. And you know, own preferences. In that case, my advice is you want a really robust coating in this environment. You're going to have mats and what have you. If it was my house, I wouldn't go putting water base down if you can put solvent down, because it's going to be more resistant to that scratching and stuff with a sandy area. So those types of things come into play. And then the weather comes into play. I'd much rather be putting down a water-based coating if they need the job done. We're moving forward with it. I'll ring a client and say, hey, we're having some challenges with a solvent-based coating in this environment. Do you want to wait, or would you like to go with a water-based product, and then explain the differences? So a lot of work goes into that. And I think that's probably why we don't really have many issues that are more than going and sort something out in 5 minutes. Yeah.
And just on that point, have you had consumers kind of, have you been able to change their mind and go to the water-based for that reason? Is that quite
a... Quite often. And probably one of the biggest ones is in your first coats of a solvent-based product, you can see some rejection somewhere. And you explain, and you've already given them some understanding about what rejection is and what the contaminants may be causing it. And that there's no guarantee that no matter what we do, it's not going to be a problem in your final coat. And so the best solution here is to put down a water base over the top. They're happy to go with that. And by the time, if you build up enough rapport and trust with the client, a lot of clients, it blows you away, says, Dwight, we trust you. You do what you say you need to do.
Do what you think. Yeah. Excellent. So I guess what is needed to achieve a really slick floor sand?
I think when we probably look at the old days and people, and I was reading the Atma magazine, and Brett Scapella was writing a really good piece around contaminants in a coat, and he reminisced about the old days a fair bit. In the old days, I don't think people really looked as hard around sanding shape. You've got things like chatter or drum marks, whatever, in the floor.
Right.
And I think that still relates to today, where most complaints would have to be around coatings and what the coatings are doing, and if it doesn't look equal or even in some form or manner, whether that's gloss or lap marks. Getting a really schmick job is important around getting the coating right. And you know, over the islands, I've had jobs where I've had to put six coats on to get the coating right. And it's not about leaving the client to make the decision. It's about you having a standard and saying, it's not good enough. Let's move on. And that's not an easy line either, because a lot of coats mature over some time. So, you know, last week we did 150 squares in Mackay, and the coating looked what I would assess as being dry. And I did say to the homeowner, we've got the time, leave it 2 weeks and we'll come back. Didn't look dry anymore. So the coating just cured properly. But you can't leave it without saying, it's not quite where I'd like it to be. Don't turn a blind eye to anything. And the hard thing is, charge accordingly so you can do that, you know. Have your bases covered. So if you need to put more coats on, you can.
And obviously, being up North Queensland based with the humidity, do you find you've got to give obviously a lot more time for the drying side of things compared to when you're based in Brisbane?
In the cooler months, no. And this is interesting. In the warmer months, yes. The humidity does. And especially with water-based coatings, it's, you know, you go, I can put down a sealer and get two coats on in a day. When it's humid up here, you're waiting around longer for a water-based sealer to dry than you are for a solvent, for sure. So, yeah, it's just about knowing the environment you're working in and what products you're working with in those cases.
Yeah.
Thanks to Urethane Coatings for sponsoring the podcast series.
At Urethane Coatings, we are 100% Australian-owned and manufactured. Oil-based, waterborne, and solvent-based floor and concrete coatings. Our flagship products in the monothane and watercoat systems range reveal beautiful finishes each and every time. Urethane Coatings, really looking the goods. Urethane Coatings, for all your timber and concrete coating needs. Visit us at www.urethanecoatings.com.au for more details.
Thanks to Urethane Coatings for sponsoring the podcast series.
Yeah, sorry, I made a decision about, I'd say, 5 or 6 years ago to never push a coat. And that was a case of, if it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon, don't even bother trying to coat the floor. Wait till 10 o'clock the next day.
Yeah, I can do it. Great point. Did you learn that as a hard lesson? Is that how you learned that? Because I mean, a lot of a lot of people like listening to this podcast will get, you know, with that 4 p.m. can I, can't I? Yes, I'll risk it. But in the end, it's going to cost them a week's more work if it doesn't work right.
Huge lessons. I think the biggest learn for me was when I was down the Gold Coast and on my own, I was probably averaging, and this is an average, I think we did the maths, is about 170 squares a week. So when you're flying solo, whether you've got team members or not, if you're averaging 170 a week in the insurance game, I think you're under the pump, made so many mistakes. And it was just about pushing too hard, coating when you weren't meant to. When it's dark, you're not cleaning your brushes and rolls.
You're rushing.
You're stuffed at the end of the day. And again, there's a flip side to that. We used to work for $28 to $35 a square meter down there. As we progressed, it went up to 50 and you stopped pushing.
Yes.
Because you don't need to do square meters. So, good
point.
Yeah, two-edged sword, I suppose. If you're going to take the time to do things properly, then quickly understand you can't charge at the bottom.
No, that's a great point. So moving forward, I guess, so the next side of things is how important do you see machine maintenance in general for you?
Huge. I got to a level, and it's a self-professed level for my own sanding, when I kept having an old 12-inch machine chatter and nobody knew how to fix it. Everyone had an advice and opinion. So I went, I'm going to buy a brand new machine, and I bought a brand new 12-inch Galaxy. And it chatted straight out of the box, interestingly. So in saying that, the guys came down and we worked through the machine and we got rid of the chatter and we moved forward. Through that process, I understood how important it was. So every year, all my bearings get redone on my machines. I always have spares. I have new top rollers. I have new capacitors. Even energy surges on your machine can cause chatter. So all of a sudden you've got a capacitor half out, and you've had this chatter for so long, you don't know what it is. And then you just change it by mistake and bang, the machine's not chattering anymore or causing a wave. So machine maintenance is huge. It's just going to add work. You can still work with machines that aren't maintained properly, but you just add hours. It's a waste of money and time. You're better off every day of the week buying a new machine. It's the core of your business, or getting somebody who knows what they're doing with them. I always do the maths. I've got, I don't know, two Canterbury machines now and spare parts, new gearboxes, whole kit caboodle. The same with the 12-inch Galaxies, all spare parts ready to go, and doing it yearly.
So that's a good point out there. So how much skill and how much is the equipment in getting the great sanding jobs, would you say?
Yeah, it was interesting. I think about the word skill. I think there's technique, and I think it comes from experience of just doing hours and hours of different timbers, how they react differently. I now basically have one process for all floors. And I can show people my process, and whether it's the best, not the best, whatever it may be, I can show people my process, but they will have to work at that for another 3 months, get their own interpretation of how that works, and they're still not getting the same result.
Makes them feel comfortable.
Whereas I give it to some other people, within a month, they're going, oh my God, I've got this nailed. So it's techniques, and improving yourself the whole time. I don't want to even show my guys who work for me how to do something, and then they don't adapt it to suit them. And so you can have really bad equipment and still get a great job. It's just, why waste time on bad equipment? I've had, over the years, people who've been sanding for years come up and their machine's shaking like a dog sanding a floor. I don't have a problem with that.
No.
But you can't leave the chatter in the floor. You get rid of it.
That's right.
It's no drama. Yeah.
Yeah, good points. So what added difficulties are there when resanding a coated old floor, would you say?
I just think it's a full process. You know, you can get some new floors. An example would be, and I just said earlier, all my floors are basically sanded the same way. If we get an oak floor, we're just sousing that floor and moving on. Because it's a soft timber, if it's been laid right, some floors are right and the like. So it's a pretty quick job.
Yeah.
When you're sanding older floors, you've got to change your expectations. Your floor's only going to be as good as the subfloor is. So it's a full sand. It's you're using the techniques to cut. We cut a 45 every floor to make sure we're going to get a flat floor. And that first rough cut is probably, to me, the most important piece of the entire job.
Yeah.
So that the difference in sanding the floor of an old floor is that takes probably more care and a little bit longer. In saying that, a newly laid hardwood floor, for whatever reason, can be just as difficult. So then we transfer more challenges are what type of coatings on the floor and what are you getting up? And then we balance the products. I try and use alcohol-based sealers as much as I can. And when you have an old floor with some fill in it and somebody's filled over it, so say it's the second time they've sanded before you came along, you've got old solvent-based coating underneath and somebody fills it, then coats it, we come and sand it and coat it, and then you go and put a solvent sealer on top, all of a sudden the old coating's bubbling through with the old fill point. So there's some of the idiosyncrasies that can catch you out. It only fries when you're in your last coat.
Yes. So, and that's an experience thing too. Yeah.
Old existing contaminants are probably the biggest bugbear that will catch you out at the end of it. And then assessing the floor in the first place, can you do a full sand on this floor without taking too much off? Is it getting too thin? So that can then change what you're doing on the job.
And just on that point, how would you go about doing it, assessing the boards to see if they are too thin for people out there listening?
Yeah, first step is to see if you've got any cracked boards on the tongue and groove side, up the edges of the boards, any movements as well. So a lot of the time you can walk around and you can feel it spongy. You know, old building codes, you can have
a
bit of a 50 wide joists under a pine floor. But generally, it's the cracking of the board edges and your harder timbers that you're looking for. And then find a gap. You know, if you see any cracks at board edges, and a lot of the time, one area of the floor has been sanded down to its last life and the rest of the floor is okay. And interestingly, I find that under bridges and stuff, and I'd say it's because people have just hacked it. This won't be seen, so they're going to put a fridge over it and they hack it. And then I get vernier calipers out and measure down any gaps or cracks that I can for sure.
Yeah, fantastic. So are some coating types more difficult to get a good finish than others, and can you provide an example?
Yeah, look, I think I'm a bit of a perfectionist. So examples would be if I have a buff on oil, I will use one brand, which is, I say, a single pack, and I can get that equalized beautifully. And then one day I haven't really experienced a two pack oil. I put down a two pack oil and you've got buff marks everywhere. Now, they all disappear in time, you know, unless you've advised the client that might be the outcome when you finally finish the floor, you've got a problem when you walk into it. All coatings have issues or characteristics that can be an outcome of being it being poorly applied.
Yeah.
I've never gone, well, I'm a guru at all floor coatings, because I just think it's too hard out there.
Yeah.
A lot of the time we'll put down a coating and think we know the reason for it. And my example is, I was talking to a rep the other day and I was talking about the job over the island, which took six coats.
Yep.
And he was just explaining to me that they found that when they didn't put the sealer on thick enough, they were having these lap mark issues. And it clicked to me 5 months after we did the job that that was perhaps the case for this job, because I couldn't understand what was going on. So all the coatings have characteristics which, you know, you work out how to do them better as you go. One of the key things on all products except for your oils for me is the more the merrier. And it's hard to explain to people. If they've only really done solvents and you say pile on the water base, they only double up what they're putting on a solvent. And I say, it's got to be more. It's got to be more. Yeah. And again, guys out there will do it. My experience has been saying, I don't need to put on more. I've never had a problem. And then I'll have them ring me a couple of months later. Oh, I've got a problem. This is what it's doing. And I give them a hand and it's resolved, because they're just not putting enough on. If you've got a dry timber, all of a sudden you've got a problem where, a more moist board was never a problem in the past. And then we can be a fool to think, oh, we've worked everything out, and you go and do a stain or a different brand of stain and somebody explains to you how to do it. It's just experience. You've just got to suck it up, get it wrong until you get it right.
Learn from your mistakes. That's the best way, isn't it? Yeah. So we spoke about the time of the day you do your coatings. How much weather conditions do you take into account when you're thinking about staining the floors?
Yeah, huge. And you said staining. Are you talking about coating in general?
Coating in general, yes.
Yeah. So in North Queensland, I basically say before 9:30 in the morning, we don't want to be coating. It's really difficult, especially in the wetter season up here. I'm talking, we look like Olivia Newton-John. Call out to her. We've got sweat bands on arms, wrists, heads, elbows, and you still can't stop from dripping on a floor. So there's that for a start. And then we get an ocean breeze, which seems to push away the humidity in most areas up here for me. So I generally don't want to be coating before 9 o'clock in the morning. If it's raining and the like, I just put it off. I just tell clients, you just have to wait. And the beauty of what's going on with COVID today is people are now getting used to waiting. So you just have to wait. If you want the result, you just have to wait.
Do you get any pushback and people going, it's indoors, why are you putting it off when it's raining? That kind of uneducated kind of response?
No, I can't say I have. Probably the opposite. People say, oh, it's raining, will it affect the coating?
Okay.
You go, yeah, it can do. And I actually have my humidity, my Lignoversatech moisture meter, which reads relative humidity, and I'll have that in the house before I start going on a wet day to make sure it's not extreme. Probably the opposite, Josh.
That's really good to hear. You know, sometimes people are just like, you know, you're crazy. I'm under a roof. Why can't you do my floor? You know,
just do it.
It's education. So excellent. So people open doors. after a floor is coated but not cured can be obviously a real problem. So what do you do to prevent that?
I just have a robust contract. So along with the signage and what have you, I basically stipulate that I'm not in control of quarantine of the site. Okay. Generally, you supply me the keys and nobody else has access while we're doing this. If you have the keys, I'm not responsible. And then I point out the types of characteristics that can be a result of the door being opened, of dust coming in, of gloss variation, whatever it may be. And it's probably one of the key points that I put in place when I'm negotiating with clients in the first place. So along with signage, where it's applicable, I've tended not to do that so much these days, but that's because I'm so strong with the communication in the first place.
Yeah, fantastic. So my last question today for you, Dwight, is you must obviously have a job that you can think of that was as good as it can get. Tell us a bit of about this job and how it turned out so well for you.
Look, I don't think there's one that I just go, that was schmeck. I honestly believe.
Is there one special job you've done? Is there one special job?
Best one was the one that I had, was able to sand the floor in with the Candyman that won the awards quite a few years ago. I mean, that was just a beautiful floor. And that was at a time in my career where I had worked out how to get a flat floor. Jim Hilston and Greg Siglarski will say, no, Dwight, there was one corner there that was just not quite level with the windows that looked down into million-dollar cars. But I suppose, again, there's the time to do it. The funds are in it. So you're not rushing, and do what you know you need to do to get it right.
Yeah.
All your mistakes happen because you're behind schedule. I guarantee that everyone's trying to do the best job they can do, depending on their tools.
Yeah.
One that kills you, you run out of time. Somebody's pushing your buttons. You're not in the right frame of mind. So you've got to zen out and just make sure you got the time to do it with no pressures. Besides that, how do we get a schmick floor? And I say this to clients all the time, and people ask me, is let me install your floor in the first place.
Yeah,
because you're a victim to a subfloor, for sure.
Yeah, excellent. So, Dwight, I obviously want to thank you for giving up your time today and being my guest on the ATFA Wood Podcast. I'm sure our members are going to enjoy it and get a lot out of it. So thank you very much for being my guest today, buddy.
No problems. Thank you. Appreciate the time as well, Josh.
All right, I hope you all enjoyed today's ATFA podcast, guys. We'll have a new one coming to you very soon. So please, for the time being, stay safe. And a final word from our sponsor for today.
Urethane Coatings, for all your timber and concrete coating needs. Visit us at www.urethanecoatings.com.au for more details.